Okay, we're starting from Lamed Gimel Amud Bet. Today's daf is Lamed Daled. We'll just read the Refuah Shlemo. Devara bat Dina Oz Avram Shema Ben Chana Karmi bat Ima Orli Penina bat Rachel Frida Chaya Malka Esther bat Zipporah Daniel bat Reb Chaya Rut. Today is going to be all drashot. Okay, maybe a bit of a break from the complicated Tumah stuff from last week. But on the other hand, sometimes this stuff has its own complications. How you take it and what you do with it and what the meaning of it is. Okay, we were in a discussion from the Mishnah. Remember, the Mishnah started with all the things. There's texts that you say that you either say b'chol lashon or you have to say dafka b'lashon hakodesh. And one of those things was about the mizbech that they built when they got into the land, right? Hashem said you're supposed to build a mizbech and say that, you say the brachot or the klalot. And then they talked about when they went into the land. And then, they built the mizbeach and all that. So, when they got to Gilgal. So then they had a whole discussion about the crossing into the Yarden. And that's what we're going to talk about today. When they crossed over into Eretz Israel and they crossed into the Yarden, what exactly happened? And how did things go? So, we're starting with the Braita at the bottom of Lama Gimel Lama Bet. Tanya, Rabbi Yossi Omer, B'shlosha mekomot nasu kohanim et ha'aron k'shavu et ha'yarden. Number one, k'shavru et ha'yarden, k'shei sivu et yiricho, v'k'shech ziruhu limkomo. Okay, so there's three times generally in the Mishkan, in the Midbar, we know in the desert, that who carried the Aron? Levi, Shevet Levi, right? There was a part of Shevet Levi, their job was to carry the Aron. So now what they're saying is there's three times where the Kohanim actually carried the Aron. And there's a bit of a difference of opinion about whether... One of the opinions actually says that at this, in other words, these are three cases where the Kohanim carried it, not the Leviim, but in theory, the Kohanim could carry it any time, and the reason the Kohanim didn't carry it in the Midbar, there's an interesting interpretation, there weren't enough of them. Levi, Shevet Levi was obviously bigger, because Shevet Levi, right, the Kohanim are just a small part of Shevet Levi, and there were very few Kohanim, because they came from the sons of Aaron, and therefore... They didn't do it in the Midbar because there just weren't enough of them. Once they became more plentiful, so then everything shifted to the Kohanim. Whether that's accurate or not is a debate. You know, others say, no, really it's the Leviim's job, ideally. But there were three cases where the Kohanim did it, and this is probably because of the importance of the event. They wanted it to be done by the Kohanim. So number one, they carried the Aron when they crossed through the Yarden. Okay, and that appears explicitly in the Psukim. K'shei sivu et Yericho, when they circled Yericho. Right, when they did the 7 days, so the Kohanim carried the Aron. They went in front of they were at the head of the group when they carried it around. Ukishich ziruhu limkomo, when is this? When they put the Aron during the time of Shlomo HaMelech. Okay, when they came and they put the Aron back into the Beit HaMikdash, right, they moved it from where it was into the Beit HaMikdash. So then also the Kohanim did it, right? You can see these are three very big focal events. Now we're going to talk about the actual crossing of the Yarden. V'kevan, this is the continuation of that braita. V'kevan shenidbelu raglei ha'kohanim b'mayim, chazru ha'mayim la'achoreihem. Right, as soon as the raglei ha'kohanim, this sounds very much like the midrashim ha'nachshon. Right, he got in the water. Right, and in this case, it wasn't nachshon; it was the kohanim. So as soon as they put their feet in the water, the mayim quickly, right, the water quickly rose up. Shenemar ukevon nosei ha'aron ad ha'yarden. Okay, the continuation is Ragle Kohanim Nosei Aron Nitbilu Bikte Amayim VaYarden Male Al Kol Gedotav Kol Yemei Katsir VaYamdu Amayim HaYordim Milamala Kamu Ned Echad Archeik Ma'ob Me'adam, etc. Okay, so this is an exact a bunch of things that we're going to discuss at the beginning of the daf are really, they appear explicitly in the text. If anybody wants to, you can open the text and look inside. I brought a bunch of Tanachim today. So Yoshua Perakimel, these are the ones we just read, Psukim Tepav Tetzayin. So when the Nosei Aron got there, Vayamdu Amayim Hayordim Milamala Kamu Ned Echad. Okay, now there's a discussion. Kama Govhan Shamayim. How high did the water rise up? Okay, very strange question, right? Why do we care how high the water rose up? Okay, one interpretation is actually not how high, which we're going to see from the answer. This makes a little more sense, although the continuation of the sugya doesn't work out as well with that interpretation. But we'll see in a minute, the very beginning of the sugya does. It's not actually how high. The Maharsha says that it's how wide did the water open up. And it's how much dry space was there. And you'll see why that interpretation makes sense right now. Shnema sarmil al shnema sarmil. Okay, 12 mil by 12 mil. Keneged machane Yisrael. That was the space that Machane Israel was, and that was the size of the encampment. Remember, they camped, there was, right, the whole encampment in the Midbar was, the Aram was in the middle, right, then Machane Leviyah, then out, right, the Kohanim, then the Leviim, then the Machane Israel, and there were three Dgalim on either side, and the whole space was 12 mil by 12 mil. And that way, if you take it, not kama gopho, but you say kama rochbo, that was exactly, that space had to dry up because they walked in the way that they camped. That's how they went through the Yarden. Not in a straight line, right? It's not like, okay, line up everybody and let's walk in a straight line. According to this interpretation, they walked in as they camped in that formation. Okay, so that's one interpretation, but really, the pshat seems to be not the way the Marashah says. It's actually how high did the water go up? And then the assumption here is it went up. Okay, now here you have to assume that the rate of the people walking, the pace that they walk, is the same as the pace of the water going up. So as they were walking, the water's rising, 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 rising. And then, right, when they're done, they go through, and then the water goes back down. Okay, and that's why the height of the water exactly matched the space that the people took up. Okay? That's the assumption here, which we're going to reject in a minute. Okay? That's Divrei Rabbi Yehuda, or at least see another interpretation. Amar lo Rabbi Elazar bar Rabbi Shimon, litvarecha adam kal o mayim kalim. According to you, right, which one is faster? Havei omer mayim kalim, right? Mayim, clearly water moves faster than man moves. So therefore, the rate of the movement of the water can't possibly be the same as the rate that people walk, especially if you think about the fact that people are carrying all their stuff with them. Right? They can't possibly move, even though the Yarden is not the fastest flowing, right? Anyone who's done kayaking in the Yarden knows that it's not the most fastest flowing water, but it does flow faster than man walks. So therefore, Hevei Omer Mayim Kalim Im Kein Ba'im Mayim V'Shotfin Otan. According to your numbers, if that moves at a rate of 12 mil by 12 by right 12 mil by 12 mil, and then the people go at a slower pace. Well, as soon as the water gets up to that rate, it's going to start falling back down, and it'll fall right on top of the people, and they'll drown. So it can't possibly be. Ela melamed shahayu hamayim nigdashim ve'olin kifin al gabei kifin, or kipin al gabei kipin. Okay, the water was slowly going up. Okay, Rashi says like ulamot al ulamot. Okay, like it was making these, it kept going up and making sort of like waves going up. Okay? Yeter mishlosh meot mil. Okay, it went as high as 300 mil. Okay, much, much higher, obviously. Ad shera'u otan kol. Now, here's going to be the significance. Why do we care how high it went up? Because the higher something is, the more visible it is. So what happened? Ad shera'u otan kol malchei mizrach uma'arav. Everyone from the east and the west was able to see it. Shenemar, how do we know this? Because it says we're going to now bring two proofs. One is a more obvious, one is a little less obvious. Vayhi kishmo kol machei ha-mori, asher ba'ever ha-yarden, yama, v'chol machei ha-kna'ani, asher al-yam, et asher hovish Hashem et me ha-yarden mipnei b'nei Yisrael ad Ovram. Vayimas levavam v'lo haya behem od ruach mipnei b'nei Yisrael. Okay, this is a pasuk from Yoshua Parakeh, and it basically says, everybody around saw, right? They were scared of the Jewish people. They realized their God is an all-powerful God. It made a big impression on everybody, right? Which sounds very similar to Kriyat Yam Suf, right? It's the same type thing. There's a whole bunch of things in Yoshua that somewhat parallel a little bit, certain things that happen then, kind of make the entrance, right, the beginning, kind of like the exiting of Egypt. So now, they're saying, that's our proof. Everybody saw. How did everybody know about it? Right, they didn't have internet, email, right? We didn't get around to it. Oops. Okay, so we were saying that everybody saw. It was very noticeable. That's why it rose so, so high that it would be seen by all the neighbors. Now we're going to have another proof that if you don't read this carefully, you don't realize that there's something a little not right about it. But now we're going to say, here's another proof. Af Rachav Hazona Amra L'Shluchei Yehoshua. Rachav, the Zona, remember Rachav, the first one, they write the Meraglim, when Yoshua sends Meraglim, right, another similarity to Moshe, right, he sends Meraglim, he sends the spies, and she said to the Shluchim, to the spies of Yoshua, Ki shamanu et asher hovish Hashem et meyam suf v'chule. Right, she says, we heard, now what does she hear? Not that, right, not that we saw.
This
yafeh. Okay, very good, so you have to think about it. The splitting of the Yarden hadn't happened yet. Right. Okay? But what does she say? She says, we saw the splitting of the Yam Suf. You know, we heard about it. So they say, how could it possibly be that she heard it, that they heard about something that happened so far ago? So they're saying it's sort of as a reference, even though it hasn't yet happened yet, to the miraculousness. Yeah, it doesn't fit so great. To the miraculousness of the splitting of the Yaridim. But yeah, definitely, there's a little bit of a fetch there. It doesn't work 100%, or it doesn't work. Right, it doesn't work. It doesn't really fit. But what's interesting about her language, I think they're saying that the language is referencing what's going to happen in the future, almost like she's predicting, because of the same words, it's et asher hovish, right? It's like the same exact wording as appears in Parakeh. Okay. Uchtiv, right, and then it says here, and it says also there, vanishma v'yimas levavenu v'lo kama od, right? So it's the same wording that's used over there. Okay. Odam bayardin, they're still in the Yarden. Amar lahem Yoshua, du'u ama atem ovrim et hayarden. As you should know, why are we doing this? Amanat shetorishu et yoshvei haaretz mipnechem, sheneemar v'horashem et kol yoshvei haaretz mipnechem. Okay, so first he's telling him, just know we are going into the land to conquer the land. But what does he say? Im atem osim kein, if you do that and you fight to inherit the land, mutav. Vim lav, right? Imagine they're standing in the water standing up, right? Letting them go through the dry land. Yoshua says, but if not, what's going to happen? He says, ba'im mayim v'shotfim otechem. Okay, it's a very strange word, otechem. We'll still speak about it in a minute. But he's basically saying, right, the water standing out there, he says, listen, we're going in to conquer the land, but if not, the water's going to basically swallow you up. It almost sounds like a reference to the Mabul, right? Like the power of the water. Okay, it's kind of almost threatening them with the water standing up there. You know, make sure you're doing this and you're doing it with, you know, the right intents. My otechem, what's this otechem, right? It's a weird word. It should have said etchem, right? But what does it say? Otechem. So what do they say? Oti ve'etchem. In other words, not only are you going to be swallowed up, but I'm going to be swallowed up also. It's not just saying, if you don't do this, you're going to be destroyed. He's saying, I'm with you, right? I'm part of you and I will go down if you go down. Odam bayardin, they're still in the Yarden, right? We keep having these, right? They're still in the Yarden. And what happens now? Amar lahem Yoshua, harimu lachem ish even achat al shichmo lemispar shivtei Yisrael. Do you remember this? They each have to carry a stone on their shoulders, one for each shevet. Uchtiv, leman tiyezot ot bekir bechen, ki ishalum b'nechem machar lemor, also same as Moshe, right? When your sons ask, right? The whole premise of the Haggadah is all about these psukim, about when your sons will ask. So he says, this will be a sign that when your sons ask, Lemor, Maha Avanim Ela Lachem, right, they will know. Now, where did they put these Avanim? Okay, so it's unclear. There's two sets of Avanim that happen. If you open your Tanachim for a minute, okay, look at Yoshua. Okay, we're in Perek Hay. So there's two sets of rocks. Do you remember? There's one that they bring to Gilgal. And what's the other set? Anybody remember? They leave it in the water. Yafin. Okay, so it's unclear which ones these rocks are referring to. And it's actually complicated because the psukim, most of the mepharshim say that this is talking about the ones that they put in the water. And soon we're going to see the ones they take to Gilgal. Okay, let's just read through the Gemara first and then we'll look in the psukim. And you'll see there's a bit of an issue here of the psukim they're choosing. So, siman labanim sha'avru avot et ha-yarden. And that's why they assume it's going to be a siman for the children that the fathers will cross through the Yarden. Presumably, we're talking about the rocks that go into the Yarden, right? It makes the most sense that way. Odam, I'll show you in a minute through the psukim, though, why it doesn't necessarily make sense and why you could see reason to say that these are the ones they took to Gilgal. Odam bayarden, amar lem Yoshua, su'u lachem mizeh, mitoch ha-yarden, mimatzav raglei ha-kohanim, hachen 12 avanim. Okay, take from the Yarden, from where the kohanim are standing, take 12 avanim. V'ha'avartem otam imachem v'hinachtem otam b'malon asher talinu bo alayla. Okay, here's the ones that they clearly bring to Gilgal. V'chulei. Okay, so now they say, yachol b'chol malonu alon. You would have thought maybe any malon they want, you know, that they, like, put them in the malon, like, any, you know, tomorrow, the day after. No, so therefore, talmud lamar asher talinu bo halayla. I want them all to go in the place where you're sleeping tonight. Now, what's strange about what happens here in the psukim the Gemara chooses, I just wanted to show you this. If you look in Bamidbar and Yoshua, Perek Dalid, Pasuk Bet, okay? ויאמר השם ליהושע לאמור, קחו לכם מן העם 12 אנשים, איש אחד, איש אחד משבט, וצבו אותם לאמור. So take 12 people, command them, and this is what you should command them. שאו לכם מזה מתוך הירדן ממצב רגלי הכהנים, אחם 12 אבנים, וראיתם אותם עמכם, והנחתם אותם במלון אשר תלינו בו הלילה. That's the one that the Gemara quotes second, right? The one that actually appears in the text first. Okay? But it's interesting, it's not quoted in the name of Yoshua in the text. It's quoted in the name of Hashem. Hashem tells Yoshua, this is what you should say to the people. So the Gemara then quotes it in the name as if this is what Yoshua said, even though that's not the, right? That's not the pasuk where Yoshua says it. Okay, so that's first of all. Then it says, so Yoshua in Pasuk Dalet, he calls to 12 people, and then he says, Ibru lifnei Aron Hashem Elokechem al tocha yardein, barimu lachem ish evan achat al shechmo lemispar shivtei b'nei Yisrael. Leman tiyezot ot bekir b'chem ki yishalum b'nechem achar leimor. Right? So then it seems from the text that what does Yoshua do? Now he goes and he says, he asks what Hashem wanted and he tells them, pick up avanim so that your children will ask you, what are these avanim? And it seems from the text, right? Va'amartam lehem, and you'll say to your children, nichritu, these were taken mimei hayardein, mipnei aron brit Hashem. Right? And these will be a zikaron. And then they take them. What happens? In Pasuk Chet, they take them and they take them to Gilgal. So far, it sounds like we're only talking about the Avanim that went to Gilgal, okay? Which means that the two psukim the Gemara quoted in two separate sections sound like they're coming from the psukim that are actually all talking about the same thing. And then it says later, so where do the ones come up that they put in the Yarden? So then it says in Pasuk, Tet, Ushtem Esra Avanim Hekim Yoshua B'toch Yarden Tachat Matzav Ragle HaKonim Nosei Aron HaBrit V'Yisham Ara Yom Hazeh. Yoshua himself, it sounds like he does it. Nobody carried them. So that's why the Mefarshim that say that the first group is talking about the same 12 that in the second group, right? They're saying basically these were the same 12. Okay, but most of the Mefarshim say, no. What the Gemara is doing is it's saying that also the people were involved in both of them, even though the text doesn't say so. And it gets everybody involved and it says, you know, it takes it out of context. Okay, what I want to show you here is very typical for Drashot that they often take the Pesukim out of context, and here they took the ones in Hashem's name and put it into Yeshua's voice, and then took the ones that Yeshua actually said and applied them to something else. So again, two ways of understanding the Gemara here. Okay, so now Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Abba Chalafta v'Rabbi Lezer ben Matya v'Chananya ben Chachinai amdu al otam avanim. Okay, they actually stood on those rocks that were taken. Right now, it's not clear which ones they're talking about. I don't think it's clear here which ones they're referring to. V'shiarum kol echad ve'echad shkula ka'arba'im se'a. Okay, they estimated. Okay, they figured out that each one was weighed 40 se'ah. Now it's a very strange thing because 40 se'ah is a measure of volume, not a measure of weight. So again, obviously it could be 40 se'ah of something heavy, 40 se'ah of something lighter. But no matter what, it's a very heavy weight. Okay, 40 se'ah is pretty big. It's a heavy weight. I forget exactly how many liters it is. We've seen this before. How many liters number of se'ah? No, you're always good at looking these things up. Oh, you have it? Se'ah is 2.5 gallons, either 4 or 2.5 gallons. So let's say it's 4. Let's go with the highest one. Okay, so if it's 4 times 40, so 160 gallons. Okay, that's a lot. Okay, so now get this, though. Okay, what they want to say now is that Ugamire de tu'una de madle inche le katve tilta de tu'une. Okay, so now they're going to say, according to this, each of these people carried it by themselves. Now the assumption is if there's a certain weight you could bear by yourself, and there's a different weight you could bear if somebody lifts something onto you, and that you can actually carry three times more if somebody actually helps you lift it onto you, which is the general way people carry things. So therefore, they're going to say that the general weight that a person could carry, right, that these guys were so strong that they were carrying a third what they actually could have carried. They actually could have carried 120 se'ah. Again, this fits in with what we've been talking about Sota all along, this miraculous nature of all sorts of things, right? We're talking about the miracle of the splitting of the sea, and then the miracle of how, you know, how strong these guys were, that they were able to carry, right? They were given this amazing strength to be able to do something that was so important, to lay the groundwork for the future generations.
And presumably the miracle of the Sota waters and
that. Right, exactly. So then it connects back to the miracle of the Sota waters, that also that has, you know, this miraculous nature. Now, if we're already talking about miracles and things that people can carry, where else do we see this miraculous nature that people can carry things? The spies, okay? We made mention of the spies with, let's say, Rachah. Now we're moving on to the spies from the Torah. From here we can figure out about the Eshkol. How big the Eshkol, right? The grapes that they carried out of Israel, how great they were. Shenemar, v'yisa'uhu bimot bishnayim. Okay, they carried it on a pole with two. Now, I tried to look up in Google. I thought maybe you could find a picture of this in some artwork that describes what we're actually going to say the Gemara says. But every picture I saw, okay, I couldn't find anything that didn't have one pole with grapes hanging off, right? One person in the front, one person in the back. Now we're going to see that according to the Gemara, that wasn't actually the case. And I was very surprised. I couldn't find any sort of, I mean, you'll see there's images in the... Right, it's a logo of all sorts of, right? Also, the tourism logo, you know, comes from there. Anyway, right, it's all these anavim, but you see that all the pictures don't match actually what the Gemara says actually happened, okay? There's two of the Korans around, and Razel has one also, so we have three. They have good diagrams in the Koran, okay? So now, we're going to see a few different opinions. Mimash mashenemar bimot. Since it says bimot, eni odeasha b'shnaim, in other words, what's the problem in this pasuk? You should really wait to look at it till we see the Gemara inside. Okay? So now, they carried it b'shnaim. So what do you mean? If it's a mot, right? It's a pole. Obviously, you need two people to carry a pole. One person can't carry a pole. I mean, you know, you do have those poles, like those individuals that carry small poles with a little bundle in the back, right? But the assumption is these motes were generally carried with two people. So therefore, why do you need b'shnayim? Matamu lomar b'shnayim. B'shnei motot. There must have been two different poles. Okay, that's the first opinion. Okay, that two people carried a pole and another two people carried a pole. Okay, and that through that they carried. Now, how could that be, right? How do you...
I've seen images like that.
Yeah, you have? Okay.
With two parallel poles and four people.
Okay. But you didn't see eight, right? Yeah. Okay. So, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, tortani v'tortani d'tortani. Okay? Now, he explains that it was two poles and another two poles that were supported. Okay, so now there's four different images of what exactly this means. The Mefreshim differ on what he means. Okay? But the assumption is, ha-ketzad, shmone nas'u eshkol echad. Eshkol. Okay? Eight people carried this one thing. So either you say, like Ruth said, okay, there were two poles going one direction, two poles going in the other direction, and then you had one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight people, okay? Each one on one end of every pole. That's one option.
That.
And the eshkol was in the middle. You didn't see that picture.
No, just two parallel poles.
Oh, two parallel.
Draped over both of them like that.
Draped, but how they connect to each other.
They didn't. Four people carrying two poles, not connected, just parallel.
And where was the grapes?
Over both of them.
Ah, I see. Okay, fine. So you could have that.
And
right.
Even if you put...
That's two poles, not four, you're saying. Right. Just two parallel poles.
And even
poles,
if you
right.
put something the other way, you don't necessarily need two people staying on each side.
Right, you wouldn't necessarily need it. Their point is it was very heavy. This is, we're going to get to the weight of it in a minute, okay? Or the volume of the weight. Okay, so now, that's one option. Another option is that there's two poles going, right? I might get the pictures to... But then, there's two poles over here, right? There's two poles, right? There's four poles, and then at the edge of each pole, there's... At the edge of there's two major poles going through, straight through, and then two poles going the other direction, and the eshkol in the middle. But then in order to carry it, they didn't hold the edges of every pole, but they put like a small pole on the two that are parallel to each other, on the edges of that, they put a small pole on either side, and each two people carried either way of that. Okay, that's another interpretation. And the other is that actually there were, right, this is one, two... There were two poles going the long way, and then on either side, they had two poles going one way and two poles going the other way. Right? That's also, right? There's all different ways of looking at it. Anyway, I thought these images were good the way they showed it. The Schoenstein has other images that are a little more complicated to follow, but all different ways of saying that they needed eight people to carry this. Now, if you need eight people to carry it, right, what's the math? Everybody can hold, sorry, the pen's not working anymore, everyone can hold 120 se'ah, right, if somebody helps them get it on. So 120 times 8, we're going to get to 960. Okay? So Shmona Nasu Eshkol Echad, which was 960, right, that's the right math? Yeah, 960 Se'ah. Echad Nasa Rimon, ve'echad Nasa Te'ena. So now remember how many spies? There were 12. So 8 carried the Eshkol, 1 carried the Rimon, 1 carried the Teina. That gets you up to 10. And who are we left with? Yoshua and Caleb, right? Yoshua and Caleb, lo nasu klum. Okay, 2 interpretations as to why Yoshua and Caleb didn't carry anything. Maybe they were of the most important spies and therefore it wasn't respectful for them to have to carry things. In other words, maybe they weren't part of this whole atzat meraglim to basically, you know, the whole idea of bringing these fruits was to say this is a crazy land and look at their fruits and we'll never conquer their people. And Yoshua and Caleb obviously weren't part of that. Okay, now we're going to get more into the spies. Before we do that, we're going to just do one more thing here. Rabbi Ami, Rabbi Yitzchak, Nafla, Chanamar, Lidivri, Rabbi Yehuda. Now we're going back to the water, okay? Why they're going back to it now, I'm not 100% sure, but they're going back to the water and they're saying, Chanamar, Lidivri, Rabbi Yehuda, Kichanayatam, Avru, right? What's the machloka? Whether it went up 12 mil by 12 mil or it went up this 300 mil, right? So now they're going to say, so the one who said that it went up, right, maybe it's based on this machloket, that the one who says, Kedivrei Rabbi Yehuda, that it went up 12 mil by 12 mil, because he said, the kechayatam of you. Remember I told you, they walked through the water the way they were camped. But Ledivrei Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, Bezechar Zavru, they walked single file, okay, or maybe two rows, right, we don't know how many rows exactly, but they walked in row formation and not in this box formation. And again, then you'd have to say it. Obviously, it's going to take way longer if you're going to walk like that. Okay, but again, he said it was way higher that the water went up. V'chanamar bein maru bein mar kechanayatam avru. And other ones said, no, no, no. They both agree that they went in like the way they kechanayatam. Mar savar adam kalu mar savar mayim kalim. Okay, the first one who said it was 12 mil by 12 mil thought that man, now it's not necessarily moves faster, but he's just, man can walk at the same pace as the water. Okay, and the other one holds, no, 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 the water moves much faster, and that's why. Okay, now we're getting back to the Meraglim. Okay, this is the famous issue about the difference between the way it appears in Sefer Devarim, this is why also I brought the Tanakhim today, and the way it appears in Sefer Bamidbar. If you remember, the spies are sent, right, and it starts off, we all know, Parashat Shlach. Why is it Shlach? Because it says Shlach Lecha. Right, Shlach lecha anashim vayetur et eretz Kanaan. Hashem says to Moshe, send spies. But if you look in Sefer Devarim, when Moshe is talking to Bnei Israel and he gives them a brief recap of things that happened, right, what does he say to them? Right, it seems clear that the people wanted to send spies, right, and not that Hashem said it. Okay, it's in pasuk. Where is it? Aleph kaf gimel. Right? No, kaf bet. Vatikravun elai kuchem. You all came to me, vatomru, and you said, nishlecha anashim lefaneinu. Let's send people before us, vayachpiru lanu et haaretz. And they'll check out the land. We're going to see this root, vayachpiru, what the real root of it is in a few minutes. Vayashivu otanu davar, taderech asher na'alebav, et harim asher na'voy lehem, right? And they'll tell us how we're going to conquer the land and what cities are we going to go to. Vayitav be'enaya davar, and it looked okay to me, you know, it sounded okay to me. And God doesn't really appear here. Okay, so we're going to see now the Gemara darshaning this. Shlach lecha anashim. Amar Ish Lakish, shlach lecha mida'atcha. Send them on your own accord. In other words, I don't think you should send them. Why? V'chi adam ze borer chelek ra la'atzmo. And is someone going to... God knew what was going to happen. So why would he... Right? Why? This is a whole... play on Bechira Chofshit. Okay, there's a bunch of things in today's stuff that are going to relate to man having free will. Okay, here it's saying, why would God set up something that he knows is doomed to disaster? Okay, he knows what the end result is going to be. So therefore, he certainly wouldn't have sent them. Okay, again, this a little bit takes away the Bechira Chofshit aspect. Definitely wouldn't have sent them, had knowing very full well what was going to happen. And here's a further proof. Behind Udichtiv, Vayitav Be'enai Hadavar. Amarish Lakish, when Moshe says it in Devarim, that it was okay in my eyes, what does it mean in my eyes, right? Typical drasha. Amarish Lakish be'enai ve'lo be'enav shel makom. I thought it looked okay, but it didn't say vayitav be'enai Hashem. Okay, because God clearly didn't want this to happen. Vayachpiru lanu et ha'aretz. Amar Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, miraglim lo nitkavnu ela liboshta shel eretz Yisrael. What they really wanted to do from the beginning, okay? And here it's all about, right, did the change through the course, right, were they affected by what they saw? or did they come already with preconceived notions and with what their plan was from the beginning? And this matches the machloket that we saw before about whether Caleb and Yoshua didn't carry it because they were more respected among the group, but in theory this is like a positive thing, or the turn negative, right? Or was the whole plan to bring the fruits back already a negative idea to try to show the people and scare them, and therefore obviously Yoshua and Caleb weren't part of it. And here it's saying it started even from the beginning. Okay, that their whole point was the Boshta. How do we know? Now we're going to see this. Vayach Peru. Ktiv Hacha. It says there. Vayach Peru lanu et ha'aretz. Uchtiv Hatam. And there's a different pasuk. I think it's from Yeshayahu. Yeah, Yeshayahu Kafdalet. That says, V'chafra ha'levana u'bosha ha'chama. The moon and the sun will be embarrassed, will be ashamed. Okay, the root of chafar is to embarrass. Okay, and their whole idea was to embarrass the lamb, right? To make it look bad. Okay, now we're going to darshan more things about this parsha. Ve'ele shmotam. Here are the names of the meraglim. Lemateru uvein shamua ben zachor, etc. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, davar zeh misoret biyadenu, me'avotenu. Okay, we have a masorah from our fathers that what? That miraglim al shem ma'aseihem nikru'u. Okay, all their names are a drasha. It's, you know, their names kind of, this is what, right, there's two ways to look at it. Either the names were given after the fact, you know, and they're kind of, it's a, like a sifruti name, like a literary name. Or that, you know, when you name someone, everybody always says the name you give has impact. And that the names kind of, you know, led to what they did. But, you know, I think you could look at it also that their names are literary names. But what does he say about this interesting masoret? V'anu lo al tav yadenu el echad. But we don't really know. We couldn't, right? We don't know. It was passed down to us, the concept that their names meant something bad. But we don't really know. We didn't get what the masoret was. We don't really know the bad names, except for one. Which one? Satur ben Michael. Satur, why Satur? She satar ma'asav shel kadosh baruch hu. Michael sha'asatzmo mach. Okay, now what does this mean? So there's a few different interpretations. I'll stick with one basic, right? He canceled out the ma'asim of Hashem. Some people say he canceled out the words of Hashem. Hashem said, you're going to go to the land. And they said, we don't think we should go to the land, right? Or some people say, God did all these miracles for us in the desert, right? The actual ma'asim and not dvarim, not things he said. And they basically said, there's no miracles aren't going to work here and we're never going to make it. Okay? So now, Michael, he made himself weak. Now here, all the Mefreshim say, it doesn't mean himself. It's a reference to God. It's just they don't like to say negative things. It's Lashon Sagi Nahor. So they said himself. We've seen this about where it says, Sonei Hem Shel Yisrael, when it really means Yisrael. They don't want to say anything bad. So it means he made God look weak. Okay, and that's the Tor Ben Michael. So that's the only one we really know from the Masoret. Comes Rabbi Yochanan. He says, Am Rabbi Yochanan, Af Anu Nomar. I can give you another one. Probably the assumption is he figured it out. In other words, he darshened it himself. Not that he had a masoret about this. Nachvi ben Vapsi. Okay, interesting name. Nachvi shehvi dvarav shakadosh b'chu. He hid the words of God, right? In other words, they tried to hide the fact that God said he can do this for them. And, you know, he kind of hid it. Upasi shepisea al midotav shakadosh b'chu. He kind of trampled over them, right? He, what's the word, how did it, or he skipped over? He stepped over them, okay? You know, he said, oh, the midot of Hashem aren't worth anything, and, you know, we're not going to be able to do this. Okay, next drasha on the meraglim. Vaya'alu b'negev vayavo ad Hebron. Very famous pasuk, okay? They go up to the Negev, and he comes to Hebron, right? What does it mean, vayavo? It's vayavo, right? Where's everybody else? Why only one person? Why is it singular? Vayavo mi baile. It should have said vayavo ad Hebron. Amarava milamed sheperesh Kalev me'atzam meraglim. Shows that Kalev walked off on his own. He comes just to Hebron by himself. Why Hebron? Wasn't Hebron? Marana Machpelah. So what did he do in Marana Machpelah? Why did he go there? V'halach v'nishtateach al kivrei avot. He went to the kivrei avot. Amar lehen avotai bikshu alai rachamim she'enatzel me'atzam meraglim. Now this raises a whole interesting question. Again, not enough time to get into it, but number one, it raises the issue of praying to dead people. Are we allowed to pray to dead people? Okay? Is this something, it's part of our culture. Number two, what's he praying for? He's praying so that he doesn't sin. What do you mean? It's up to him to sin, not up to his fathers to sin, right? It's not something that prayer can help you with. In other words, that's something you either decide, this goes to the Bechirah Chofshit, you either decide you're going to sin or you're not going to sin. What's he saying? So the Mefarshim all try to grapple with this. What exactly is going on? You know, it could be he was doing it more for his own sake, right? In other words, if you look at tefillah, like Rosh Hashanah Rafael Hirsch says, that tefillah is reflexive. It's hitpalel, the word hitpalel. It's self-judgment, right? Palal is judgment, and it's self-judgment. It was really for his own sake. In other words, he was trying to get chizuk in and of himself, not that he was actually praying to dead people. And that's a much better way to look at it. And it also resolves your issue of the Bechira Chofshit. In other words, he was really just trying to find inner strength. So he went to the fathers for the inner strength. Or it could be he was praying to Hashem to use Zchut Avot to help him. And, you know, the best place to do that is to go pray, you know, at the Kever of the Avot to, you know, to reference that. Anyway, it's an interesting question. We're going to see even more so. We're going to ask another question in a minute. So basically, that's what they're saying. So he went off on his own to Hebron to try to be saved from what they were doing, not to be part of it. Yoshua, what about Yoshua? Why didn't he go? Right? In other words, we always put Yoshua and Kalev together. So where was Yoshua? Yoshua kvar bikesh Moshe alav rachamim. Ah, Moshe already asked rachamim for Yoshua from the beginning. Shenemar, vayikra Moshe loshea binun Yehoshua. Why that? Why Yoshua? Ya, here's a drasha. Ya Yoshiacha me'atzat meraglim. God should save you from the atzat meraglim. Again, raises the question, is Moshe allowed to pray, right, to prevent Yoshua from sinning? Again, it's up to Yoshua. Like, what's this, you know, someone else praying for you not to sin, taking away his option, b'chira chofshit? Anyway, it's also another question there. V'haynu dichtiv, v'avdi Kalev ekev hayta ruach acheret imo. Okay, and here you see that Kalev had this ruach acheret imo. In other words, Yoshua didn't need that. He had Moshe taking care of him. Kalev had to find this ruach acheret imo to kind of take him off the path. Okay, by the way, there's a whole literary analysis of the story. I'm not going to get into this now, but that we always think of Yoshua and Kalev as together. And here the Gemara is starting to allude to the fact that they weren't really together. There's two different maslulim. Like Kalev goes off for his reason and Yoshua's got his own. And it doesn't 100% match what the Gemara is saying. The Gemara is saying, you know, Yoshua was protected by God and Kalev needed his own. But there's definitely some clear, if you look in the text really well, you'll see that Yoshua and Kalev aren't grouped together as much as we do. Obviously, they both come out good guys in the story, but in different ways. And this is really where the source of it comes from. What did they see there? Visham Achiman Sheshai V'Talmai. Okay, right? They're Yilidei Ha'anak. Remember the giants they saw there. Achiman, what is Achiman? Again, we're darshaning names here. Miyuman Shebachiv. He was the most accomplished of all the brothers. Sheshai Shemesim Et Ha'aretz Kishchatot. When he stepped, he made these huge ditches, right? His legs made ditches in the ground. Talmai Shemesim Et Ha'aretz Tlamim Tlamim. Same idea. Okay, he made these furrows in the ground. Davar Acher, Achiman bana Anat, Sheshai bana Alash, Talmai bana Talbush. Okay, they each built a different city. Yilidei Ha'anak, why are they called Yilidei Ha'anak? Here they're darshaning Ha'anak. Shema'anikim chama bekomatan. La'anik is to wear, like to wear jewelry. So they wore the sun as their jewelry. They were so tall that the sun kind of became their jewelry. V'chevron sheva shanim nivnita. Okay, here's another pasuk that's difficult. Okay, if you look inside, it's pasuk, right? So here, we're just darshaning this pasuk. V'yalu b'negev v'yavod chevron in b'midbar yud gimel kafbet. V'sham achiman sheshai v'tamai yilidei ha'anak. V'chevron sheva shanim nivnita lefnei tzoan mitzrayim. Okay, this pasuk actually is problematic. Why? What does it mean, nivnita? Sounds like Chevron was built 7 years before Tzoan Mitzrayim. So they say, Ilema nivnita mamash, afshar adam bone bayit libno katan kodim libno gadol. Doesn't make any sense. The way things worked in those days, right? We see this with Lavan and marrying off the daughters and age order. Age order was a very important thing, right? As much as we see it overturned all the time, and in this case, Dafka, the youngest son, Canaan, gets the best land, right? Presumably we believe that Eretz Canaan is the best land. He got the best land, but he was the youngest. Okay? And Mitzrayim was the older brother. These are the sons, right? Ubnecham, here we'll read it inside now. Dechtiv. Ubnecham, Kush uMitzrayim. Okay? And you have to read the rest of the Pasuk. Ufut uKenan. Okay? The sons of Ham are Kush, Mitzrayim, Fut, and Canaan. So now, if they say the Chevron was built, which was in Eretz Canaan, before Tzoan Mitzrayim, it doesn't make any sense. Because even if Canaan was chosen, he got the better land because he was the younger one, right? Which often the younger son gets chosen over the oldest, even though, right? But there's still rules, right? Even though all the time, right, the younger one in Sefer Bereishit is always getting chosen over the older one, Still, the laws of inheritance go by the older one, and as we still have a lot of things this older one still gets. So therefore, the rules of the older one being built first still should apply. And therefore, how could it be? So therefore, it doesn't mean it was built. Okay, this is obviously, you'll see where they're getting to. They just want to give another compliment to Eretz Yisrael. Ela shaitam muvuneh alacha mishiva betzoan. Okay, it was much more developed in terms of the fruits were better, etc., which goes with the story about the fruits and the carrying of the, right, the gigantic grapes. It was much more well developed, and all the more so, why was that miraculous? Be'ein lecha trashim b'chol Eretz Yisrael yeter mi'chevron. Dekavrei ba'shichvei. Okay, now what does this mean? Generally, what kind of land do you pick for burial plots? You pick land that can't grow stuff. So if Chevron was where the burial plots were, obviously it was rocky land. Had a lot of rocks in it, and it wasn't good land for farming. And yet, despite that, it was still seven times greater than Tzoan Mitzrayim. And what do we know about Mitzrayim? Ve'en lecha mu'le b'chol ha'aretz yeter me'aretz Mitzrayim. Usually that's the most fruitful land possible. Shene'emar, kigan Hashem ke'aretz Mitzrayim. Right? The water's always overflowing from the Nile and everything's always great there. So what do we see now? Right? Ve'en lecha mu'le b'chol ha'aretz Mitzrayim yeter Mitzoan. And Tzoan was the best place in Mitzrayim. How do we know? Dechtiv. Dafka, the important people lived there, which means it was clearly the best land. Okay, so out of Mitzrayim, which is so great, Tzoan was the best. Sheva shanim nirtal lefnei Tzoan Mitzrayim means the Chevron was so much greater than Mitzrayim in terms of its fruitfulness, despite the fact that Chevron was bad land for farming. Okay, and here you see the miraculousness of it. Again, the avoda also trying, right, the Gemara is trying to put Chevron on a pedestal, because that's where our fathers are buried. So now they're just going to question one last thing. The Chevron Trashim Have? Was Chevron really rocky soil? V'haktiv? V'yimi ketz arba'im shana v'yomar Avshalom al-melech Elchana. Okay, where does he want to go? He wants to go v'shalem nidri asher nadarti l'Hashem b'chevron. Okay, v'amar Rabbi Abia v'item Rabbi Bar Chanan shalach l'avi kvasim mi'chevron. He went to bring the sheep from Chevron. V'tanya elimi mo'av kvasim mi'chevron. So what do you see here? It was obviously had good land for grazing. If the sheep were from there, then it must have been good grazing land. If it was good grazing land, well then it can't be that it was Trashim and it was this bad land that you're trying to claim it is. So they say, no. It dafka proves the point. Why? Aide de klisha ara avde raya b'shamein kinyana. Okay, what does that mean? Because it was bad, it was rocky soil, the only thing that grew there was grass. Grass, then, is obviously in the best place for them to graze. And those rocky land that's not good for farming is actually better for grazing. Because then just grass grows there and nothing else, and therefore it's very good grazing land. And because it had a lot of grass growing, then shamein kinyana, right? Therefore their kvasim were very fat, and that's why he went there specifically to get the kvasim.
Good.